This is the La Trobe University podcast. I'd be your host, Matt Smith. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. It does all depend on where you're standing. This would be a very special podcast because we are joined not by one, but by two guests today. If I could have a generous round of applause for Professor Dennis Altman, and if we could have an equally impressive round of applause for the man in the sidecar, Associate Professor Nick Bisley. Thank you for being here, guys.
Are we supposed to be on a motorbike?
Very high-tech motorcycle, Dennis. Mm.
It's theatre of the mind, come on. So we're here to talk about the US election today. Things are hotting up at the moment, slowly but surely, and we have two very interesting and very different candidates as well.
What I think of them personally is obviously rather different to how I see them as political figures. I think that what's striking is that if we were here a year ago, we wouldn't have picked either of them, probably, to be the presidential candidates. In a sense, each of them is somewhat of an outsider in their own party. Obama, particularly, a senator who's only been there for a couple of years, who actually got into the Senate almost by accident, and who therefore can claim to represent something new, who can claim, as most presidential runners do, that he's running from outside, that he's not part of the establishment. John McCain, more complicated because he's been in the Senate a long time. He represents, in that sense, a great deal of Washington establishment, but at the same time has always positioned himself publicly as a maverick. And what's going on at the moment is a quite successful move by McCain, I think, to simultaneously run as the candidate of experience and the candidate from outside Washington. If he can pull that trick off, my hunch is he can win the election.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, the most obvious thing, of course, is the very striking age and physical difference between the two, which reflects the extent to which the voters are going to be presented with what seems to be two quite distinct packages. As Dennis said, both of them were by no means a shoo-in to win the nomination, and to some extent, I think, are struggling, I think Obama particularly, struggling to turn a successful primary campaign into a general election message. And particularly in the wake of the sort of show-stealing that came out of the Republican National Convention, where the selection of Governor Palin as the vice presidential candidate suddenly stole the thunder, and Team Obama hasn't thus far been able to sort of recapture news momentum or to tell a story as to what they're presented with.
Well, do you think that sort of decision is going to benefit McCain?
It certainly seemed to be very effective in giving him momentum, and there's no doubt that polls, which should always be taken with a certain amount of caution, but the polls have turned around very sharply. The gap that Obama had had, while narrowish, but had been fairly solid, has turned around. And that can, in no small part, be put down to the extent to which the surprise of the Palin story and the ability for it to galvanise various parts of the electorate in different ways, from re-energising the sort of conservative core that had always been slightly suspicious of McCain, through to attracting working class Democrats, women and others to the McCain ticket, which otherwise they might have had a great deal of difficulty doing. So I think it's a momentum story, but as time will go on, I think Palin will become less significant. But in terms of halting what had been a fairly entrenched pattern, it was pretty effective.
Two quick points. Firstly, I think things will change once the presidential debates happen. There'll be four debates, one with the two vice presidential candidates, but three with the presidential. And I really think that at that point, the focus will shift back, as it has to, on the presidential rather than the vice presidential nominees. The second point I'd make is that Republicans have a history of running with not very impressive vice presidential nominees and winning. Democrats have a history of often having what look like very impressive vice presidential nominees and losing. So I don't think that the Palin effect is going to have much of an impact in the end. I agree entirely with Nick. It was an enormously successful short-term tactic for re-energising the Republicans. I'd be really surprised if that effect lasts through till November.
It definitely got attention, though, yeah, at this stage.
The interesting thing to me was that it gave McCain a bigger audience, bigger television audience, for his acceptance speech than Obama got. And again, I don't think anybody would have predicted that. And that is a clear impact, I think, of the Palin choice. But as I say, that is, I think, going to be pretty well overcome by what happens in the presidential debates. And in those debates, I think the visceral image of the two guys up against each other and the difference of age and race is going to become the crucial one.
At the moment, internationally, we've got a very different perspective of how the election could play out here. I mean, you guys clearly know your thing, but to most Australians, how they think the election's going to play out is maybe not how it's going to in America. America's very conservative with their voting. It's going to take quite a step for them to vote somebody like Obama into office.
Can I just say that the United States is actually probably less conservative in its voting than we are?
Really?
Well, in the sense they're more willing to change administrations than we have been. I don't think one can say that the American electorate is necessarily more conservative. By conservative, you mean reluctant to change. I agree with you that Obama is a candidate who I think is going to be really hard to sell to large numbers of the Americans who will turn out to vote. And, of course, the really crucial difference is that we have compulsory voting. They don't. And the turnout in the United States, even in a really good year, is, what, about 60% of those eligible to vote, depending on how you define that.
That's a good year. I mean, the 96-2000 elections had just over 50%, and in 2000 it was actually just under 50%.
Yeah.
Of the eligible electorate, which was, you know, most people thought a pretty dire state of affairs. It turned around in 2004, of course, in reaction to what occurred in 2000. But the other thing I think which is interesting is that polling, you know, there's these big global polls, particularly the Pew poll, which goes on looking at what the rest of the world would like to have happen in the US, overwhelmingly shows that voters in Europe, in Asia, in Africa, naturally, and elsewhere, want Obama, and are going to be, if McCain does win, going to be sadly disappointed. I also happen to think that they'll be sadly disappointed if Obama wins as well, but because there's too much expectation outside America that Obama represents this new face of American politics, a new face of America in the world, and a lot of people who are interested in this election in ways which we haven't really seen before, the amount of foreign attention in the American election is unprecedented, are painting on Obama what they want to see in what they would like out of American politics, whereas in fact he is a politician. He'll be constrained by all of the domestic problems and difficulties and, you know, the haggling with Congress and all the sorts of difficulties of life as a politician. So my sense is everyone's going to be disappointed no matter who wins.
And you don't think he'll live up to the hype if he does win?
Absolutely not. I mean, he can't possibly live up to the expectations that a lot of people have for him, because those expectations are so utterly unrealistic.
Dennis, I was reading an opinion piece that you did in the Financial Review, and you seem to have changed who you think over time would win the election.
No, actually I haven't.
Really? You always thought that?
Well, back in January, and I think there's an earlier piece in the Fin Review, I also said I thought McCain had a much better chance than most people. If you remember, I mean, I think you were alluding to that certainly early in the year, there was a strong sense that the Democrats, whether it was at that stage Obama or Hillary, were the front runners.
Yeah,
and I was
yeah.
pretty doubtful about that. Doubtful not because I necessarily think the American electorate is more conservative in an Australian sense, but doubtful because I think that a black or a woman candidate is going to run into a lot of unstated resistance. I think in the end, the undertone of distrust and fear of Obama, because he's an African-American with a strange name, who is being portrayed in a lot of right-wing propaganda as a covert Muslim, is just going to hold enough people back from voting for him. I hope very much I'm wrong, but that would be my current feeling.
Well, with voting being optional over in America, I hear that a lot of the voting is skewed towards the older population, that they're more likely to go out there and vote, while Obama's appeal mostly lies in the younger people, and that would also have an effect as well on his likelihood of being elected, wouldn't it?
That's part of the problem, that the people who vote are disproportionately older, whiter and richer. You know, it's fascinating to speculate on what would have happened in previous American elections if they had our system with compulsory voting, or indeed if they even had our system of an electoral commission which was national, non-partisan and knew how to run elections. The United States runs elections in ways that we in Australia would be totally appalled by. It's a very amateurish, localised system. There's a lot of, not direct vote rigging, but certainly a lot of procedures that make it more difficult for people who are more vulnerable, who are poorer, who are less educated, to actually get out and vote. And in a close election, that becomes really significant. The number of polling places, the difficulty of registering, all those sorts of things become real factors in a country where you don't have what we've grown up accustomed to, an official electoral commission that stands above party politics.
Ideally, if it was up to you, if you were one man, one vote, who would you put through?
If I could choose the president. Well, given that I would probably be constitutionally unavailable, as I'm old enough, but I'm not born in the United States, out of the present mob, I would certainly prefer Barack Obama. I agree with Nick. I don't think Barack Obama will be nearly as radical or mark nearly as big a shift with current American policies as lots of people hope. But I think that he will mark some shift. And I also think that symbolically, bringing an African-American into the White House would be an extraordinary event. It would be an extraordinary event in American history. It would represent, I think, a symbol to the rest of the world. It would be very, very powerful. The fact that a country with the history of slavery and racial discrimination of the United States was willing to elect an African-American president would, I think, give the United States leverage and moral authority of a sort that they certainly have not had under this administration and arguably have really not had since the Kennedy administration.
I mean, I think Dennis is spot on in the sense that the rest of the world is always going to be somewhat disappointed by an Obama presidency, but the image and the symbolism of black president to the world, particularly in light of what's been going on in the past 8 years, is really, really powerful. And in, you know, in international politics and foreign affairs, symbols matter. You know, the intangible stuff really carries weight. Whether he's going to be elected, however, is another matter. I increasingly think that it's going to be an extraordinarily close race. In fact, I think it'll quite likely to see a rerun of 2000. That's to say, not necessarily with all of the legal shenanigans that went with it, but that's to say a situation where, in effect, you've got a statistical dead heat in the election. And we've sort of forgotten that for a long time now, the American electorate has been solidly and very evenly divided between Republicans and Democrats. And you see this in the closeness of the electoral races in the House of Representatives, in the Senate, and in the presidential campaigns, that given how large the electorate is, the percentage that separates the two sides is actually very, very small. And I think as we get closer to November, the polls and the other indicators, I think, are going to point towards a very, very close race. And in that case, you end up with the sort of problem that Dennis was pointing at, which is exactly what we saw in 2000, where the localised, amateurish and sometimes outright corrupt electoral practices actually matter.
There's something I should add to that, though. I agree with Nick, it'll be very close, but since 2000, the Democrats have certainly strengthened, and in polls of party preference in the United States, the Democrats have regained ground as having much more support than the Republicans. Not necessarily a majority, because large numbers of Americans identify as independent, right? They don't identify with either party. The interesting thing here is that if Barack Obama could actually carry every single voter who identifies as a Democrat, he'd be pretty sure of winning the election. The problem is there are a considerable number of people who identify as Democrats and who may well vote Democratic in the House and Senate and in local races who, for one reason or another, have huge reservations about Obama. And these are the people who I think, and I agree with Nick, will make the election very tight. And the other thing we're not mentioning, we need to, is that, of course, it's fought out on a state-by-state basis. And in the end, again as in 2000, indeed as in 2004, the results really will hinge on what happens in half a dozen states, and particularly in some of the large states where if you carry that state by one vote, you still get all the votes that that state is entitled to in the American electoral system. McCain is much more of a conventional right winger. I mean, I'm trying to think who he'd be.
Well, he's even not. I mean, in some things, he's not that right wing in America. In fact, part of the reason that Palin has been a reasonable success is that it's gotten some of the core Republican, the hard right Republicans, who have always been very suspicious of McCain because on some issues he's not very Republican in that right wing sense. The most obvious one is migration and migration reform, and he's on record as supporting and probably would support as president an amnesty for the illegal
That took me by immigrants. Surprise.
And,
yeah.
You know, he is, if you look at his record in the Senate, he is, as he really presented himself in the past, somewhat unpredictable. And to say that he's a right winger out of the classical right wing Republican mold really misses the point with McCain.
Sure, but I'm using right wing. Look, I think if we wanted an Australian analogy, The politician I think he most resembles might be Barnaby Joyce.
For those of us who don't know.
Well, you should. Matt, go back, come and do politics. We have very good politics courses at the Trove. You can come and do first year Australian politics. Barnaby Joyce is the slightly maverick national senator from Queensland who on occasions has crossed the floor in the Senate, which in Australia is very unusual. In the United States, it's commonplace. And Barnaby Joyce is a man who is deeply socially conservative on most issues, but will occasionally be quite surprising in his positions and is willing to take on the party establishment and essentially vote for what he believes in. And I think that that's probably true of McCain. When I said McCain was conservative, I was thinking more of his economic and foreign policy positions. I mean, McCain is a hawk. McCain was a strong supporter of the sending of more troops to Iraq. He is perceived as having a much tougher line internationally than Obama. And he's also someone who, having told us he knows nothing about economics, which is a bit scary in the man who might be president of the United States, consistently has basically supported George Bush's policies, which work effectively in favour of the people who are already very well off. So when I refer to him as right wing, Nick's right. On some social issues, a bit like Barnaby Joyce, he's unpredictable. Although, to be fair or unfair to McCain, depending on your own view, he has been consistently against abortion, and he has made clear that he would appoint to the Supreme Court judges who take a tough line on abortion. And one of the consequences of this election will be that the new president will almost certainly be in a position to change the composition of the Supreme Court in ways that could have huge implications for a lot of issues that in the US system are settled through the courts rather than through the legislature.
Yeah, I think the consequence of the election is actually going to be pretty significant in that currently, I mean, the Supreme Court's just one issue. But, I mean, the other thing which we've sort of haven't talked about is the American economy. And there's the immediate problems, the crisis in the financial system, and how that will play out in the election. But there's also something which we haven't mentioned for a long time. I mean, we, not just here, but if you read the media, the American government has been running the most massive deficits. And Republicans, you know, historically have presented themselves as the government of fiscal responsibility and running sound fiscal policy and the like. But under the Bush administration, these guys have been spending like it's, you know, like it's Christmas time. And this is just not sustainable. And it's certainly under the current conditions in global financial markets, doubly unsustainable. So the next president is going to have to deal with this and deal with this in ways which are going to hurt Americans and it's going to hurt the global economy. And, you know, if one had the ear of Barack Obama, this is the one area in which he polls consistently ahead of McCain as being seen as more competent economically, and in which he's got, I think, some capacity to get traction. But, of course, he hasn't been around for that long. And so the ability to sell a "I'm going to run the economy better" type message is a tough one when you're you know, a senator who's been in the Senate for, what, 4 years? Something like that?
I thought two.
A very, very short period of time. So it's difficult. But I think whoever gets the next presidency, is in some respects, it's a presidency you almost don't want to win, because it's going to be a very, very difficult time.
Like Dennis said, McCain's strong point is hardly economics.
No, he's famously ignorant of economic matters, blunders very visibly when confronted with economic matters, and in fact said literally on, I think it was on Monday or Tuesday, when Lehman Brothers, the second or third oldest investment bank, one of the large world's largest investment banks, was going bankrupt, which is a serious, you know, or becoming insolvent, very, very serious matter, says the fundamentals of the American economy are sound, and then very, very quickly backpedaled as you've got this very evident financial crisis going on. So we can expect more financial and economic gaffes from McCain. How this will play out, how people vote, is hard to tell, because do people vote out of this sensible, rational, who's going to run the ship of state best? Or, as Dennis was pointing out, there's a lot of evidence that when put in that private booth and asked to put the metaphorical X next to the name, some old but not very well hidden prejudices come bubble to the surface, in which case McCain is particularly well positioned.
Well, and the other factor here is that when people are scared, and I think a lot of the American electorate probably are scared by what's going on economically, they don't necessarily vote for the person better equipped to deal with the issue. They vote for the person with whom they feel more comfortable, and in some ways the older patrician figure of John McCain might be a more reassuring person in a time of difficulty than the young radical Barack Obama, who represents to very many voters a great risk. I mean, I think the irony is, as Nick points out, over the last 20 years it's been Democratic presidents who've been much more economically responsible and much tougher in spending in some ways than the Republicans, but that's not how most people see it. And there's this extraordinary gap, and I think that a lot of it... I keep going back to the debates, and the reason I keep going back to the debates is that I think that in the debates, which I would expect a lot of people will watch, if 40 million people watch McCain's acceptance speech, one can expect that sort of audience for the presidential debates, or at least one or two of them, and I think there... These really sharp contrasts of age, of race, and of style will be played out. The problem is people are not going to tell pollsters that that's what's affecting them. When you get asked by a pollster, you try and think, you try and appear more rational and logical than you really are in practice. Yeah. And that's, I think, why both Nick and I are pretty sceptical of reading too much into the polls. Although I must say, I am affected by what seems to be a slow rise in McCain support since the conventions. And that seems to be happening across the nation, pretty well in every part of the US.
Nick Bisley, Dennis Altman, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.